Mary Winifred Gloria Honeyford, hope she won't mind me saying her full name, is a television and radio presenter who's been on our tellies for what seems like forever. Thank goodness. I'm delighted to welcome her to the Lifestyle Show to talk about her new autobiography called My Life. Welcome, Gloria Honeyford.
Hi, Serena. What a very nice introduction. Thank you for that.
I always knew you as Gloria Honeyford. Didn't know there was Mary Winifred in there.
Oh, I know. I don't know where the Mary Winifred came from. But anyway, I don't think I'm a Winnie. I think I might be a Gloria.
I think you're a Gloria, definitely, through and through. So you've been in show business for 70 years?
I have, and you're supposed to gasp when you say that. But anyway, yes, at the beginning of this year, I don't know, we were just sitting as a family counting it up. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, it's 70 years this year. I started as a singer, obviously very young. And that's what I was going to be because pre-television days, my dad was a newspaper man by day and a magician by night. And from a very, very young age, almost as soon as I could walk, I was fascinated by his magic. And so in those days, because there was no TV, the homespun entertainment in churches and church halls and schools, it was very, very big business. So we used to be out 3 and 4 and 5 nights a week, and I'd still be up at 7 o'clock for school the next day. But, you know, that's just the way it was, the way of the world then, and that was how that homespun entertainment was such big business.
Were you a good singer? Are you a good singer?
Well, I thought I was a very good singer, so much so that I made records and did a lot of TV stuff. I suppose I was fair. When I eventually came over to London in 1982 to be the first woman on radio too, I mean, people didn't know who I was anyway, and they also didn't know that I could sing. So for a while, it was a very useful thing to have because I did, for example, you know, Val Dunigan's show and Des O'Connor's show and Les Dawson's show. So people didn't know who I was, and so they thought, oh gosh, you know, she not only has a show on radio too, but she can sing as well. So I was fair. I was never going to shake the world. But that's what I was going to be. And I've made quite a few recordings here and there. And ironically, I've just been asked to make another album, so I'm still considering that.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. That's really good. My final question
was... Well, I don't know whether it is or
not. My final question for you was going to be what's next, but I now know it could be an album.
Well, you never know.
Even though you came to London, as you say, and you went on Radio 2 in 82, during the 70s and 80s, you were a presenter of Good Evening Ulster?
I was. I mean, what had happened was I went in to be interviewed in BBC Northern Ireland about a single that I'd made. It actually was a Lulu inclusion for Eurovision, but didn't quite make it. But the track was there, and somebody suggested I should do that. So it went into the Ulster charts at number 7, which didn't really mean very much. But anyway, it involved an interview on the equivalent of the Today programme. And then the man who's in charge of that, and you've got to remember that there weren't many women then, either be in front of the microphone or behind. But he rang me up that night and he said, look, you don't seem to be short of a word or two. Have you ever thought about broadcasting? Which I never, ever had. But to cut a very long story short, I started work with him the next day as a broadcaster. And, of course, it was a very much a male-dominated world at that point.
Yes, of course. Was it tough?
Well, it wasn't for me because the mere fact that I hadn't been aiming for it and had been lucky and just given it. And in the book, I talk about that big dollop of luck that seems to have followed me around all my life. However, I do think that you have to make the most of your luck when you're given the chance and you've got to work hard to, you know, sustain it and also to grow it. But the point was that the very first day I went in, the man who'd given me the job, he brought me into the newsroom and he said, what do you see? And I went, I see an awful lot of men pounding away at typewriters. And he said, well, remember, you're not coming into this program, you know, to do knitting and sewing and recipes and things. He said, you will be there on the streets and you're as good as any bloke. You'll be on the streets to do bombs, bullets and barricades like them. So always remember, you're as good as any bloke. So all my life, you know, sexism has never entered my head because I always thought I was as good as the next man.
Oh, good for you. That's sound advice.
Good
then.
For him.
Yeah, brilliant
good for
advice.
Him. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah, certainly was, yeah. You've done lots of other things, far, far too many to mention, you know, in the short time that we have. But one of the things you've done recently is been a panellist on Loose Women. And didn't they also do a This Is Your Life for you to celebrate your 70 years?
Yes, they did, because Eamon Holmes, who's very well known as a broadcaster, of course, when I left Northern Ireland, he always said he was glad I left and went to Radio 2. because he got my job. Because we started, you mentioned there very briefly, Good Evening Ulster. What happened in the middle of the Troubles, you know, because the Troubles went on for decades, of course, and I was working for BBC, but Ulster Television, the commercial side, the boss there decided he would put on a 1 hour between 6 and 7 in the evening, which was very adventurous, because for a local, you know, station to drum up an hour's worth of material every day is quite a lot. And so that's what I was doing for 3 years when the man from Radio 2 came looking for me. And so Eamon, of course, who was doing farming then for Evening Ulster, he got my job when I left. So that was pretty good. He was always glad I went to London.
Well, we've interviewed him on this show, and he's a funny guy. He really makes me smile.
Very. I know. He's lovely.
And it says here as well that on Loose Women, there was an awkward moment as he interrupts his wife, Ruth, talking about sex on Loose Women.
I know, it's funny because I always say, if my mother knew I was talking about sex on live and TV, she'd turn over in her grave. But there you go. I just keep a smile on my face and say nothing.
Oh, bless you. Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure you do well over that, over the years. You've become used to it. Can I talk to you about dancing, Strictly particularly?
Yes.
How was it? This was back in 2005.
Well, ironically, I was talking to Debbie Daniels this morning, who, of course, is doing brilliantly well. And going right back to when I did it, I bet you hadn't even remembered that I did do it, because it was very early on when Strictly was very new. And honestly, if you could put one foot past the other, you were on. And the idea was to take people who couldn't dance, really, and have a look at them and probably have a good laugh at them. But it's got so slick over the years that it's extraordinary what people do now, and they're so good even from week one. But what it did do for me, because I couldn't find anybody in my family to tell me not to do it, it gave me a chance after my daughter died to smile again and laugh again, because I thought I would never have anything to laugh about ever again, because that's just how I felt at the time. I was in a very dark place. And what Strictly did for me, it was so much fun and so enjoyable to do, that it did give me that license almost to laugh and and enjoy myself again. So I owe it a lot, and it was great fun to do.
And that
terrifying,
was just...
Terrifying, but fun.
Yes, I'm sure. That was just a year later, because Karen passed in 2004.
Yes, absolutely. You know, so it was a very tough year. And I always say to people, when they lose somebody they love so deeply, that you have to keep yourself busy, otherwise you'd go bananas, because you have to have something to divert your mind away from the main thing now, even if it's only for half an hour or an hour.
It's hard enough losing anyone, but to lose a child, I can only imagine.
Well, in my opinion, it's the worst, because you can't, you know, carry that child for 9 months and give birth to that child, and you know, when you lose that child, it's just the worst thing in the world that can happen to you, because you would change places with them at any time. I mean, I would have taken Karen's cancer at any stage to save her life, you know.
Yeah.
You feel so helpless, because as a parent, there's nothing you can do but be there to support and, you know, try and make sure you get the right treatment. But it's a helplessness that it's, you know, that you never can feel in any other area, really.
Yeah. I can't imagine. People say I can only imagine. I really can't imagine. It must be awful.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Do you cover that in your book?
I very much do, yes, because I had written, I'd finished books that Karen had started, A, about dealing with cancer, and B, about her upbringing in Ireland. So I had finished those off, you know, some years back after she died. And then it just came to a point where I feel as if I've had 9 lives, you know, between that early singing and going to Canada when in the 50s, when I'd never been out of Ireland, and, you know, getting that job after singing, you know, in broadcasting, and then coming to London and all of that. And then, of course, Karen's battle with cancer. So it just seems like 9 lives. So a very kind publisher said, why don't you put it down? And so I did.
Well, good for
and
you.
And also in the 70th year of showbiz, I thought it was an appropriate year to do it.
Yeah, it is. You've never done it before. This is your first autobiography.
Yeah, somebody did one on me many, many years ago, but like so far back, I hadn't even got my feet under the Radio 2 desk in London. So this is the first comprehensive one, really.
And in the book, it tells of a moment a stranger's letter helped you to heal. And help others in Karen's name.
Yes, because, I mean, Karen was very well known in her own right, of course, as a Blue Peter presenter and so on. And I stopped counting at 8,000 letters we got after she died, which was, you know, very comforting, because, you know, people often think, should I write, should I not? do write because they bring great comfort at that time. And one letter stood out, and this woman said, you know, that she obviously said how sorry she was to hear Karen had died, but she said, you have to remember that Karen had a very big soul, and the soul is bigger than death, and death is never the end. So it was very profound, and she finished the letter by saying, you now have to find a way to carry Karen's spirit forward. And, of course, I woke up in the middle of the night and thought, of course, that's what I have to do. I have to start a foundation in Karen's name to help cancer charities all over the country of all different types of cancer. And, you know, I was very lucky enough to get an OBE recently, but yes. I didn't get it for showbiz. I got it for breast screening and cancer charities. So that was very humbling, really. And I had, of course, very sad circumstances that foundation was born.
Yeah, I'm sure. What was it like collecting the OBE? Proud moment.
It was so thrilling, and it was the Queen. So you are told in advance that it's Buckingham Palace, and my two sons and my husband were very excited because my sons have never been to Buckingham Palace, but you're never told who it might be. But one of my sons is a bit nosy, so he found out on the day from a yeoman of the guard or something that it was the Queen, and they were so excited, and it was really, really nerve-wracking to a point, but very exciting, and a day I'll never forget, nor will they.
Blimey. And how are your grandsons now, Charlie and Gabriel? They must be all grown up.
Oh, they're fantastic. They were only 10 and 7 when Karen died, and now they're 23 and 20, and both working, and both about 6'4", 6'5", and of course I'm biased, but very handsome.
I'm sure they are. Looking at Karen, she was a
lovely
beautiful
boys.
Lady.
Lovely, lovely boys, yeah.
And in the industry, in show business...
So are they? No, they've actually gone into advertising. One is sort of doing a lot of editing of videos and things, and the other is dreaming up the slogans and so on for adverts. So they really are enjoying it. So it's always nice when they settle down and like work. Because it's a new discipline when you've been larking around at university for 3 years.
Tell me about it. You've obviously, over the years, you must have met so many people. I mean, they must have all been thrilled to have met you, but lots of people that you must have been thrilled to meet. You're very good friends
well,
with...
Well... Sorry, go on ahead.
I was just going to say Sir Cliff Richard, but tell me more.
Cliff I've known for 45 years. You know, I got an interview with him in Northern Ireland at a time when no big star would come to Northern Ireland because of the troubles. And really, because I got the interview, that helped my career at that time. Because everybody said, you'll never get it because we've all tried. But then spinning on, I did a program, a chat show called Sunday Sunday. And in the book, I was lucky to have all the photographs, but everybody from Betty Davis to Audrey Hepburn to Leslie Caron to Burt Lancaster to Tony Curtis to Charlton Heston, Sean Connery. I mean, all these people I was so lucky to interview and lucky that I had the photographs to prove it. So I do a section in the book all about that, because obviously you remember certain things about certain star names. So I like doing that chapter.
Well, I'm lucky to interview you, so I want to just say thank you at that point.
Oh, that's very kind, Selena. Thank you very much.
Just
anyway, it makes a good Christmas present for the toe of the stocking.
It does. And can I just ask you a couple more questions? I wanted to know about Brucey, because you were good friends with Brucey as well, and that was a massive loss.
Yes, Bruce was very, very kind. Ironically, Karen, when she did a That's Entertainment type programme, she did a big interview with Bruce at his house, and she met Winnie, and she also met all the children. And they loved Karen, and I've known Bruce, of course, for yonks. And when we started the foundation, Bruce was always very, very kind in giving us, you know, wonderful golf prizes, you know, to raise money for Karen's foundation and cancer. And Winnie is a very charming girl. So, you know, you meet up at a lot of these functions, and I was lucky enough to be to dinner at their house a couple of times and so on. So we were very sad when Bruce died, but my goodness, what a career he had.
Yeah.
And what a life he lived, you know?
Yeah, he certainly did. He
Amazing.
Was brilliant. Yeah. And what is Karen's Foundation? What's the website so we can check it out? Maybe our listeners
can... it's www.karenkeatingfoundation, or if you just go into Karen Keating Foundation, it crops up. And you'll see we have helped. I mean, the last payout we did, over 400,000 to 62 different charities, because we don't aim to raise millions and build buildings. We just do small charity donations that help make a difference. And I think that's why people like, we're family run. We have no expenses really apart from a part-time secretary. So people know where their money goes, and I think that's why they like us. And, you know, big companies like Hard Rock, they have an event every year. And that all helps to raise money, and it allows us then to give grants to charities all over the country.
Yeah, all very, very important. Well, the book is called My Life by Gloria Honeyford, who we're speaking to now, and it is out. It came out on the 19th of October. I look forward to hearing the album, Gloria, and I thank you very,
thank you.
Very much.
Well, there you go. Watch this space.
Can't wait.
Thank you, Selena.
Thank
bye
you,
bye
Gloria.
Now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.